Good morning, everyone. You may notice that one of our members is not physically present, but I understand, Judge Coffey, you are on the line.
I am.
All right, so we're ready to proceed with the first case, USA versus Brown. Mr. Bonnet?
May it please the court. Your Honors, the district court in this case erred in its determination that this was a lawful search incident to arrest in two important regards. First of all, there was nothing at the hearing to establish that my client actually was under arrest at that point. No arrest, no search incident to arrest. Second of all, even if he was under arrest, this search exceeded the permissible scope of what would have been a valid search incident to arrest, because it went beyond a mere pat-down of his body, and they actually reached into his pants to find this material in his crotch.
If they had taken him to the police station, they could have strip-searched him, couldn't they?
At the station, I think they
could
have,
yes. So what difference does it make where it happens, as long as it happens? If it happens legitimately, that's the end of that.
Well, because this is happening.
I understand what you're saying, but I'm trying to get a distinction between searching him in the field where, when they can conduct exactly the same search someplace else, only this time they're more safe.
Well, I think, first of all, in this case, there's a big question whether they would have ever gotten to the police station.
Why? They wrestled on the ground. He tried to get away.
Well, he was never charged with anything that they'd established up to that point.
That doesn't make any difference. The question is whether the arrest was legitimate. The arrest was legitimate. They did it there, and he was arrested, and then he was searched.
Well, I'm not sure that there was an arrest without the, I mean, that goes to my other point, I guess, that there was no, you know, they never established that they'd arrested him.
What do you think he thought when he was the second time eventually brought down by the officers and they handcuffed him? What status do you think he had if he wasn't under arrest?
Well, I think the status is very similar to what this court addressed in the Wilson case, where, as here, the defendant had tried to run away, was apprehended. In that one, the police officers, you know, were very vocal at trial. Yes, we thought we had him under arrest.
Well, that's when you get handcuffed and you're on the ground, you might have a sneaky suspicion that you're under arrest.
Well, this court in the Wilson case determined...
I know the Wilson case. Well, this is a different matter.
But the key distinction in that one, I think, was that, you know, they didn't have the probable cause at that point, and they found under the same circumstances with the guy handcuffed, that he's not under arrest. And it was only after they found drugs in the field, which they were not able to do here, that they...
They made a legitimate arrest when they found him driving without a seatbelt, started after him, and he goes to a stop sign. Now there's a legitimate arrest. Right?
I'm not
now,
sure.
Now pause and tell me, if your position is you can't arrest somebody for going through a stop sign or wearing a seatbelt, we may be in two different levels of law.
I don't think you can do a strip search or searching the guy's pants for that.
No, you can't. But after you've made the legitimate arrest, you can.
You could arrest him.
Yes, and you can arrest him for going through a stop sign. He causes him the physical aspect by trying to get away and lashing out at him. Now what? I'm not trying to get in the way. I'm just suggesting that at some stage of the game, your argument doesn't seem to hold water, and I want to know why.
Well, I think
there's
the two steps here. The first of all is, was he under arrest? None of the officers said that he's under arrest.
The facts speak for it. He's handcuffed on the ground, having been tackled. Now, what do you think he was?
Well, according to the Wilson case, I think he was...
Let's talk about this case. What do you think he was when he was handcuffed and on the ground by the police officers? What was his status relative to arrest?
Well, I think it was still a custodial, Yeah, it was still a Terry stop, but they were...
You can't swallow that one yourself.
Well, I'm just reading
the court's
opinion.
Listen, you're doing the best you can. I'm not fighting.
Yeah, the bottom line, though, is there's no case that you have that says that someone has to announce it's an arrest in order to make it an arrest, right? That's not the law.
Well, I'm not arguing that they needed to tell him that he was under arrest at the time. I'm arguing that they needed to tell the judge at the hearing that he was under arrest, or give something to indicate that they believed that he was under arrest at that point.
Counsel, once they handcuffed him and they had him under control, so he wasn't free to leave, don't you think he was under arrest?
Well, I think that's a seizure at that point, but you still need to...
an arrest.
So you're saying that at the hearing, the officer should have used the magic word that we placed him under arrest, and the court couldn't draw inferences from the evidence that was presented to it?
I think they needed to establish that he actually was under arrest. Say he's under arrest. I mean, they never mentioned that they thought they had probable cause for anything either at that point. I mean, yes, they maybe could have done some of these other things, but they didn't actually do them.
They didn't have probable cause after they arrested him for going through that stop sign and for not wearing a seatbelt?
They may have for that, but they didn't. I don't believe they ever said that they did.
Well, I guess
they said they were writing a ticket, but they never said that they were arresting him for that.
Parker case of this circuit? 467 Fed 3rd, 625. The court has stated that the court must consider the totality of the circumstances to determine whether a defendant was under arrest. And the totality of the circumstances here are quite clear, aren't they?
Well, I think they still need to establish that he actually was under arrest. And, I mean, yeah, there's things you can maybe draw together that suggest that, yeah, they had probable cause for different things, but it's sort of a shifting, well, maybe it was the traffic stop, the prosecution was urging that there was assaulting an officer, but, you know, none of the police mentioned anything about, you know, that offense.
But here, because you keep relying on Wilson, but Wilson was just a routine traffic stop. Here we had the traffic stop plus the first chase, then he assaulted the police officers. I mean, so we actually had not only the traffic stops, but we had the assault and we had the suspicious bag.
Well, now, the suspicious bag, I think, had been pretty much eliminated as evidence at that point, I would argue, partly because it was a rather fleeting glimpse of it under difficult circumstances, but mostly because the officer testified. You know, at first, this was actually the second search they did. The first one, the officer testified, I searched his pockets because that was the only place where he could have hit something at that, you know, in the brief time between he thought he'd seen it and the time that they, you know, finally brought him down. So they didn't find it in the one spot where they thought it could be. They didn't find it in the field. It's sort of like if they had found it and found an Egg McMuffin in the bag, well, that would kind of eliminate the bag as a source of evidence. Here, they eliminated all the places where the bag could have been. And
you're into your rebuttal.
Yeah, you're into your rebuttal.
Okay, I think I'll save that then.
All right.
Thanks.
Are you going to step up and talk us out of it, or what?
No, I'm not, Your Honor. Right. May it please the Court, Colin Bruce on behalf of the United States. I'm not going to try to talk you out of it. I'll just point out that, number one, it's ludicrous to believe that under the circumstances Mr. Brown was not under arrest. He had shoved the officers, escaped once from their grasp by leaving his coat, was tackled, pepper sprayed, fought more. At some point in there, the radio, one of the officers got torn from his shoulder, so it was broadcasting intermittently this fight over all the channels. While that's taking place and they're struggling on the ground, the other officer tackles the first officer, Mr. Brown, knocking them all free again. Brown tries to run again with pepper spray in his face, is tackled a second time, brought down, continues to fight.
So it's your conclusion he was arrested?
I would say he was arrested at any point in there.
Good show.
To argue that he's not, I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, but the
counsel was appointed by this court to do the representation. He's doing the best he can with what he's got to work with.
I understand that, Your Honor, and I think I understand it might be the only argument he had to raise. Let me just add one more part about that. In terms of the phrase under arrest, that's foreclosed by the Supreme Court's decision in Dunaway versus New York, where they said whether you tell someone they're under arrest, use that magic phrase, that's irrelevant to determination. It's what a reasonable person would have thought. In this case, I don't think anybody would have thought reasonably the police officers, when they got done with all that fighting, were going to say, fare thee well, have a good day. You're free to go now. That was not going to happen. For those reasons, John, I ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court.
Do you have any questions, Judge Coffey?
None.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Bonnet, and how much time? 2 minutes?
I just want to point out, once again, this court has stated in the Wilson case that this court has not found that handcuffing automatically constitutes an arrest
for that reason. That's true. Taken with all the other manifestations, however, of being nabbed, it looks like an arrest, doesn't it? I want to commend you for your courage, if nothing else.
Well, thank you, Your Honor.
And we appreciate you doing it.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Bonnet. We do appreciate your accepting this appointment. You provide a very valuable service not only to your client but to the court. And, of course, we thank the government for its vigorous argument and brief argument as well. Thank you.
Brevity was